Good afternoon. You're listening to KFSK News for Thursday, December 18th. I'm Olivia Rose. The state of Alaska is considering opening up a new ferry terminal in Southeast Alaska. It would connect Alaska's ferries to the Lower 48 road system without going through Canada. The idea comes as Alaska continues to struggle with the closure of the ferry terminal at Prince Rupert in British Columbia. Coast Alaska's Angela Denning reports that the state is conducting a $250,000 study to see if a terminal on Alaska's side of the border would be better.
For decades, the Alaska Marine Highway System relied on a terminal at Canada's Prince Rupert as its southern road connection. The state has leased the terminal from Canada, but it's been closed for most of the past 6 years. There are numerous complications like infrastructure challenges and disagreements with Canada over border control responsibilities. The dock needs over $20 million in repairs, and Alaska's aging fleet isn't certified for international travel anymore.
If we can put a man on the moon, we ought to be able to solve the problem between here and 90 miles away at Prince Rupert.
That's Jim Clark, the former chief of staff for Governor Frank Murkowski, who worked on the ferry system for decades. Clark was speaking at a regional development meeting in Ketchikan last year. Prince Rupert's closed terminal has been a hot topic in many Southern Southeast meetings. Some, like Robert Venables of the Southeast Conference, say they're not ready to give up on Prince Rupert.
It's going to take everyone to lean into this thing. It is problematic at the highest levels of bureaucracies to try to get back to Prince Rupert. But we're going to give it our best push, and we're going to keep pushing until it happens.
The Prince Rupert connection isn't completely off the table, but Alaska would need a federal waiver to bypass a requirement that steel materials for repairs be American-made. The state has requested this waiver in recent years without success. Canadian officials have opposed the requirement because the terminal is on Canadian soil. And so, the state's Department of Transportation has considered Hyder, Alaska, about 90 miles from Ketchikan, as an alternative.
Fortunately, we have a lot of data for this site.
Kirk Miller is an engineer with the state's Department of Transportation.
We've done engineering up and down this whole causeway, the island. I've been working on their harbor and all these projects there for years. So we have data, but not quite enough.
He was speaking about the site last year. This October, a new feasibility study began and is expected to be completed in mid-2026. The study is looking at all the details, like where a dock would go, the water depths, dredging, and environmental concerns. It's estimated the new terminal would cost about $30 million. It's located about the same distance to Seattle as Prince Rupert, about 1,000 road miles. Prince Rupert is much larger than Hyder and has more amenities. But Hyder would be under Alaska's control.
I just want to really voice my support for Hyder.
That's Bob Horchover, a member of the Alaska Marine Highway Operations Board, which makes recommendations to the state. He was speaking at a board meeting in July.
In Hyder, we own the land, and most of the work is already done. It's a very adaptable situation. So for me, there isn't even a discussion.
The state approved a 20-year ferry plan this year, based in part on a survey of over 2,500 Alaskans. Many respondents said restoring a road connection in Southeast was a priority. And local governments agree. The Ketchikan Gateway Borough passed a resolution supporting a Hyder terminal if Prince Rupert doesn't work out. Nearby Metlakatla feels the same. Mayor Albert Smith said that having no Prince Rupert connection has hurt his town's economy.
With fishing, the rail system is real close to Rupert. So we could use the ferry to transport fish, and then it's connected right to the 48. And it's a more efficient way.
At least one Alaska lawmaker is on board, Republican Representative Jeremy Bynum of Ketchikan.
I'm going to be a fierce fighter here on the legislative side to make sure we can get the funding in place that we need.
Whether Alaska rebuilds the Prince Rupert connection or builds a new terminal at Hyder. Officials say either option would take 5 to 8 years to complete the necessary infrastructure work. Reporting for Coast Alaska, in Petersburg, I'm Angela Denning.
Juneau is expected to see frigid temperatures starting this weekend and stretching into the next couple of weeks. The National Weather Service issued a cold weather advisory for Thursday through Sunday and a high wind watch for the weekend. The forecast shows that a Taku wind event is very likely and could start as early as Friday evening. The strongest gusts of around 60 miles per hour are predicted to blow through Saturday. Wind chill temperatures could reach as low as negative 15 degrees Fahrenheit. Without wind chill, temperatures are expected to range from the teens to negative 4 degrees Fahrenheit through Sunday. Jeff Garman is the meteorologist in charge at the National Weather Service in Juneau.
We could see some periods, especially where we have the higher winds, that frostbite's going to be a real danger. And that's where dressing in layers, covering up is important.
He says the wind could also whip up freezing ocean spray, which can cover boats in ice and make maritime travel dangerous. Garman says this December is on track to break weather records.
It's looking like the numbers are shaping up for this, you know, to be the coldest we've seen in over 30 years in Southeast Alaska. It's a little unusual to go through like a 2 to almost 3 week period and be as cold as we are.
He says typically cold snaps in Juneau last just a few days instead of weeks. Garman says this one is caused by a consistent flow of strong polar air moving in from interior Alaska and Canada. In dangerous conditions, officials say it's important to be prepared in case utilities fail. There's been a string of power outages in Juneau this month. Garman says a possible snowstorm could come through Juneau around Christmas. It may bring warmer maritime air that would pull temperatures out of the negatives, but he says it's still too far out to be confident. A U.S. Forest Service plan to revamp the Mendenhall Glacier Visitor Center to accommodate more tourists could be upended by a lawsuit brought by a nearby homeowner. As KTOO's Alex Solomon reports, Juneau's top tourist attraction might have to consider stemming the flow of visitors instead.
Catherine Miller has lived near the visitor center for about 22 years.
It's my backyard, and I do spend quite a bit of time there.
Last July, she sued the Forest Service, claiming the agency violated the National Environmental Policy Act, or NEPA, when it designed its visitor center improvement plan. The plan expands facilities and increases the cap on the number of visitors allowed to come through commercial tour operators. Miller's lawsuit argued that the Forest Service planned the project to accommodate more tourism without considering other options, which it's legally required to do. In September, a federal court agreed and ruled in her favor. Now she's requesting that the U.S. District Court for Alaska throw out the improvement plan altogether. The Forest Service is asking the court to leave the plan in place, arguing there's a serious possibility the agency would reach the same decision to deal with existing overcrowding. But Miller says it matters how the federal government arrives at decisions.
Federal agencies like the Forest Service manage resources on behalf of the U.S. public and their public resources. And I think it's important to hold agencies accountable to include us in that process in a realistic way.
On top of increasing the number of visitors tour companies can bring to the area, the improvement plan includes building a new welcome center and 5 new cabins, improving the existing visitor center, paving more parking lots, and expanding trails. According to the court decision, the improvements are based on an assumption that tourism will grow 2% each year and the agency's position that it should strive to meet that demand. In its ruling, the court found the agency's options for improving the facilities were all narrowly focused on facilitating more tourism. None focused on restricting the number of visitors. Miller says the Forest Service should have considered a wider range of options, not just supporting tourism growth.
Because this isn't something that's necessary. It's something that you want to do. And so you need to explain, you know, why that's better than figuring out a better carrying capacity.
The annual visitor capacity for the Mendenhall Glacier Visitor Center is roughly 500,000. The improvement plan allows for nearly double that, with the vast majority allocated to commercial use. But to avoid having the plan thrown out, the Forest Service argues it can simply delay raising the capacity and revise lines in the plan that mention the 2% projected tourism growth. And despite citing significant congestion, the Forest Service doesn't have a system for consistently tracking how many people go to the visitor center each year. That's according to Paul Robbins, a spokesperson for the Tongass National Forest. He said a safe estimate is probably around $700,000 per year. Robbins declined to comment on the status of the improvement plan due to the ongoing lawsuit. He said agency staff plan to address deferred maintenance at the visitor center in the fall of 2026, work that was supposed to happen this year. It includes things like lighting, HVAC, flooring, and painting. He said this maintenance is not part of the improvement project. It's unclear when the court will decide whether to throw out the improvement plan, as Miller wants, or choose a different way to address the Forest Service's violation. In Juneau, I'm Alex Solomon.
A program that helps boaters use buoys to track weather conditions wrapped another successful season this fall. Advocates of the Backyard Buoys program say it increased safety for fishermen in the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta region and helped hunters in the Arctic land whales. Alaska Desk reporter Alona Nyden has more.
Several years ago, seven boaters went missing in the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta region and were never found. The loss motivated residents to find ways to better understand their changing waterways. Nalakuk is an organization that integrates indigenous knowledge into research in the region. The company joined a nationwide initiative called the Backyard Buoys Project and deployed three buoys in the area for the first time this year. Lynn Marie Church is Nalakuk's chief executive officer.
We wanted to understand what was going on in our ocean during the changes of season from spring to fall. What was going on in our community, in our waterways, especially with the changes in the environment that we've seen over the past 10 years.
Backyard Buoys Project helps indigenous coastal communities in Alaska, as well as the Pacific Northwest and Pacific Islands, use wave data to support maritime activities. Buoys installed in frequently trafficked areas track wave height, temperature, and barometric pressure in real time. Residents can see their information in an app and decide whether it is safe to travel. Church says that accessing this type of data is often cumbersome, but using the Backyard Buoys app has been easy, in part because of how it is designed.
When you look at where the locations are, it's not by latitude and longitude, it's by place names. That's how we learn in rural Alaska, and that's how we're going to continue to do the research.
Sean Gleason is the head of research and development at Nalakuk. He says the locations for buoys in the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta region were chosen in consultation with local boaters.
We picked locations where people travel for subsistence or daily travel.
Gleason says they ended up with three spots. One outside of Quinhag, where locals harvest seals and salmon. The second location was close to Eek, where mudflats create big waves. The third spot was closer to where people go out for halibut. Gleason says the goal was also to spread out those buoys so communities in different parts of the region can use the data.
We're always trying to share the resources when we can because there's no one community. Everyone's related, and when you're out there, everyone is traveling from different places to different places.
Gleason says that this fall, residents decided to retrieve the buoys right before the remnants of Typhoon Halon hit the region. He says they plan to redeploy the buoys again next year. Meanwhile, in Alaska's Arctic, the project has been ramping up as well. The Alaska Eskimo Whaling Commission facilitated the installment of buoys in six communities this year, including near Gamble and Sawunga on St. Lawrence Island. Martin Edwardson is the commission's coordinator for the project. He says the commission worked with whaling captains in each community to see where they wanted the buoys.
The whaling captains, they can get on the app and they look to see how big the waves are where they're potentially be hunting whales, and they like seeing that.
Edwardson is also a whaling co-captain, and the app helped his hunting this fall.
I was looking at the app and seeing that the waves weren't too big in the general area where we were headed, so we went out that way and we successfully harvested a whale and brought it back to our community to feed.
Edwardson says the Whaling Commission is now looking for translators to allow users of the Backyard Buoys app see information in their native language. Organizers of the program in both regions say they are hearing from other communities that are interested in joining the app as well. In Anchorage, I am Alona Nyden.
For KFSK, I'm Olivia Rose.